Welcome to Parents' Perspective. Philip! Mrs. Branson's voice cut through the air like a knife. Philip, didn't you hear me? 9-year-old Philip seemed to shake himself like a dog after a bath and looked across the classroom at his teacher.
No, well, not exactly, he replied.
Carmen and Jason, sitting on either side of him, began to giggle, and Jason made his hands into a pretend megaphone, stage whispering,
Earth to Philip, come in!
Philip elbowed Jason and then blinked his eyes and stared blankly at Mrs. Branson.
I'm sorry, I just didn't hear it all exactly. Could you say it again?
Philip,
Mrs. Branson began,
all I said was that everyone in your row should go to the science bookshelf, take a copy of the textbook, and work at your seat on problems 1 to 6 in the back of chapter 3. What is it about that you didn't understand?
Philip looked at his hands, then looked around the room. The children were busy at a variety of tasks. He looked back at the teacher like a frightened refugee.
Well, snapped Mrs. Branson again, are you going to do your assignment or not?
From a parent's perspective, what should we know about auditory processing disorders in kids? I'm Sandy Burt.
And I'm Linda Perlis. Our guest works with kids with language disorders. Kathy Hoste has been a speech-language pathologist for the last 30 years, working with language disorders in children with a focus on dyslexia. She's in private practice in Washington, D.C., and has 2 grown children. Welcome to Parents' Perspective, Kathy.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Would you explain for us what is an auditory processing disorder?
Sure. An auditory processing disorder is a term that describes a heterogeneous group of people who have difficulty using auditory information to communicate and to learn. It's not one specific problem or a disease, but a set of problems, and they occur in different types of listening activities.
But you said a heterogeneous group of people.
That's right. Anybody could have it. And it's going to show up sometimes for some people, and other times it won't show up, but then if listening conditions change enough, then it will show up. It's a tricky thing.
So it's something you have, and then it just is detectable in different ways at different times.
That's exactly right.
You mean it's sort of like being pregnant. You can't have a little bit of it. You either have it or you don't have it, and then it's detectable different ways.
Yes, that would be one way to say it. I think a way to think about it is looking at the auditory continuum. You have sounds going into your ear, and that's the basic sound bit, and your brain transforms the sounds into something meaningful that you can use for communication and learning. And there are many pathways and opportunities for things to go wrong from the time the sound enters your ear till your cortex processes the information.
So it's amazing that we don't all have it. Is that right?
Well, yes. And probably we could almost induce it depending on listening situations.
Whoa, like what?
If you were in a large, crowded lecture hall, listening to a professor talk about a topic that you knew nothing about, in a heavy foreign accent, and there's a lot of rustling and noise around, you would have difficulty processing that kind of auditory information.
Gives me new respect for college students.
That's right. And the more vulnerable your auditory system is, the more challenging it would be. But if you have a pretty good, strong auditory system, you would be able to compensate and get the kind of information you needed to in that type of situation.
When can this kind of disorder be detected? How young are kids when we can figure out if they have it?
There are different types of auditory processing disorders. There are subtypes. And an audiologist is a person that would do a diagnostic battery to determine the type of auditory processing disorder a given child would have. Then, depending on the results of that examination, you would treat the child and make different accommodations, give him different treatments, and change the environment to make listening less of a challenge for any given child.
How would a parent know to have that kind of testing done?
I think you can wonder about your child's auditory processing, if you see the following kinds of things that they're doing. If they have consistent difficulty listening in groups, if they're easily distracted by background noise, if they need a lot of repetitions, frequent huh, What? Despite good hearing, their hearing has been checked out. The doctor says fine, but they're still doing huh and what all the time. Difficulty understanding what is said in noisy environments, such as a soccer field, a basketball court. If you're on a team and your coach is yelling at you to move in a certain direction, the fans are roaring. Tough situation for a kid with auditory processing. Is a cafeteria, a playground? Okay. When they have delayed responses when spoken to, they don't reply quickly and promptly. There's just slight delays. And when you notice they have better communication one-to-one than in groups, those are things to look at. And in terms of school, if your child is having a hard time academically, despite good hearing and an average or better IQ score, you might also think about auditory processing because of the big language demands in the classroom. In infancy, you might have a child that doesn't respond to sounds or voices in a crib. The opposite can occur. You can have an infant who is hypersensitive to sound. When the vacuum cleaner goes on or a siren goes down the street, they're alert and they're screaming. At 12 months of age, if a child isn't beginning to develop words, there might be a speech or language delay, or the child needs to have his hearing tested. Just that kind of lack of responsiveness early on in infancy. Then by the time a child is heading into the preschool years, if a child likes music but really can't learn the words to nursery rhymes or nursery songs, they have difficulty sitting during story time. That's very challenging listening situation for them. They don't follow a series of oral directions. This kid looks like a bit of a daydreamer or the kind of child that will listen sometimes and not other times to things, kind of can tune out, be in a world of his own, kind of like the child in the class. He just wasn't focused. His auditory attention wasn't available to Mrs. Branson. Mm-hmm. They can become over-focused on TV, and it's hard to get their attention when they have visual information coming in. Then by kindergarten, there's longer and more linguistically complex language in a classroom, and kids are asked to begin reading, to learn phonics. And this is a big time where kids who have phonemic processing problems, that is sound processing problems, really show up and get identified. And they often have trouble with reading and spelling.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to continue our discussion about auditory processing disorders in kids.
The popular new book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talents, by Sandra Burt and Linda Perlis, is available at all major bookstores and on the web.
Welcome back to Parents' Perspective. We are talking with speech-language pathologist Kathy Hostey about auditory processing disorders in children. What happens with their peer interactions if they have trouble processing stuff by that point and they're more interactive with their peers? There's less parallel play and there's more cooperation and all that.
There can be some real challenges. What I've seen in nursery schools, a lot of kids are in the housekeeping corners, particularly the girls, and roles are snapped up quickly. I'm the mother, I'm the father, I'm the brother. And generally, or often, a child with auditory processing problems will be the cat or the dog because the language demands
are so much sad.
Well, it's a good role. Everyone loves the cat and the dog. But the language demands are much less for the cat or the dog. And they can be available to the group and still be in the play, but there won't be a lot of verbal expectation. Also in the preschool years, differences between boys and girls. Boys have much more active play. They aren't quite as chatty as girls are. And so you don't see it as early on in boys because they're out running around and not communicating carefully with each other the way girls are. So there's some differences there, too.
Is it more common in boys than in girls or in girls than in boys?
Well, it actually is a bit more common in boys than girls. I think you always have to watch those kinds of statistics because, as it turns out, it occurs differently in girls And it's less obvious.
Presents in a different way.
Yes. It's not as studied.
We interrupted your list of what happens next.
Okay. Well, you head into grade school. And generally in kindergarten, preschool, teachers are fairly friendly. They give you the benefit of the doubt. They repeat things. They'll go and talk to you. And when you head into elementary school, the demands change somewhat. The teachers are still pretty friendly. You might have trouble hearing announcements over loudspeakers. I know of a child that we had at the clinic. A big worry of his was that if there was ever an announcement for a fire, he was afraid that he wouldn't hear it. This is a first grader. And I think that kind of nervousness, worrying about something that probably isn't going to happen, but it's a big worry, occupies a lot of cognitive space and energy, creates listening problems. And then this child had a really good set of auditory intervention, and they have trouble with announcements and tape recorded things because these kids rely a lot on the face.
Visual cues.
And that's exactly right, in the visual cues when they're talking to somebody. And these kids aren't reading easily. First grade, second grade, if you're not reading well by then, you're not feeling very smart. There's a lot these days in intervention that can prevent reading problems in kids. Early involvement in that is really important for these littler guys.
Could you give us an example of how a child with an auditory processing disorder would perceive spoken language?
A lot of times they'll miss a given sound. I have a student that often says, she's third or fourth grade, she wants to get the Pacific word instead of a specific word. Mm-hmm. A lot of kids in the District of Columbia talk about the District of Columbia and not the District of Columbia. So those kind of subtle one-sound phoneme differences turn up in speech. They're the Bischetti kids instead of spaghetti. The syllable sequencing organizing can be a challenge for some of these kids. Tongue twisters are a challenge. People have these in their lexicon. They've learned to say the words in other ways. That's how they're thinking them. That's how they're saying them, all because they initially misperceived certain phonemes.
Now, what about the parents of the children who are toddlers and, you know, they're just getting familiar with the language and they say Pischetti and they say some of these things that we think are so cute? How can they sort out the cute stuff from there's trouble ahead?
Well, if it's really persistent and really frequent, generally by 3 or 4 years of age, the language and speech of children is reasonably clear, except some of these multisyllable sequencing things linger. But generally, if you can get a child to repeat spaghetti, if you break it down and they can repeat it, you would feel better about that than if they couldn't. And if they had a whole lot of those things in their speech, then you would be interested from an auditory perspective.
One of my children had trouble with R's when they were the first letter of a word.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, his name began with R.
It always does.
I asked a friend who was a psychologist, when should we do something about it? And when is it important to attack that as a problem? She said, if he gets to second grade and he still can't say his name, you need to do speech therapy with him. Would that still hold?
Yes, it would still hold. R is a later developing sound, mm-hmm. and you would give them till they're 7 years old mm-hmm. to tackle it.
He can say it now.
He's in his middle
good.
30s. He works really well with
R. He can do it. Oh, good. Good.
In what ways does a child's environment continue to affect his auditory processing?
It depends on the demands of an environment. In middle schools, a lot of children are identified for the first time with an auditory processing disorder. And that is because the atmosphere has changed. There is a lot more auditory information. Children have to take notes. And the demands and the pace of instruction has really increased. In terms of environment, there's an interesting thing to think about, I think, classroom management in terms of teachers. This is sort of an adjunct, but the teacher that can control the noise in her classroom is doing probably all of her students and certainly the students with auditory processing disorders a favor, because listening and noise is a big challenge for the auditory system and for these particular kids. So if the classroom can be maintained in a quiet way so that the teacher's voice can be heard easily, that's going to be a big favor to these kids.
What about the kinds of classrooms that are considered open classrooms and there are things going on over here and then there's something else going on over there and there's a lot of sort of individual stuff happening?
The kiss of death,
oh dear,
to a child with auditory processing disorders. There's no question about it. There is too much information. There are competing messages. He's listening to his friends. He's listening to the class down the hall. And he's trying to listen to the teacher. It's a real nightmare for a listening situation.
So parents should really look at a classroom before a kid starts school. And if it looks like it's going to be a catastrophe, try to get him in another setting.
Get in another setting. Get in a smaller group. Get a teacher who is really willing to manage the way she runs her classroom, the way she interacts with students. You want a teacher that is not talking and delivering lessons as she is writing on the board with her back to students. You don't want a teacher who's roaming and roving all over the classroom. A lot of times the teacher will agree to have a certain, quote, stage area where she'll stand to present lessons, so then kids with auditory challenges can be seated in a favorable relationship to that teacher. You want a teacher who is willing to manage her output and to think about her output in terms of what students are receiving, in terms of her volume, her pitch, her stress, how long are her sentences, how many propositions does she have in each sentence, how many units of thought she's conveying in one sentence. Some things are really semantically dense and tough to process, and you want teachers to be aware of those variables in their communication to students. So teachers can have a lot to do with how easy or difficult. Mrs. Branson, in your opening piece, with her directions, would have been a challenge probably to half the class. But that's a difficult kind of situation. Teachers have a lot of important work to do in terms of treating auditory processing disorders.
Does it help if it's written on the board?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Yes. Written instructions help. Doing often one thing at a time helps. For example, if a parent was working on a model airplane or something with their child, if they read the instructions and then maybe explain them and then do the building, versus reading the instructions, starting the building, talking about the next step, it can be very disorganizing for a child who's trying to sort out auditory information while trying to do something else. The integrating of auditory with physical things and visual kinds of information is often too much for a certain subtype of an auditory processing disorder.
So these kids are not going to be multitaskers.
The ones with integration disorders are not. Some other ones might be, but there are four or five different types that get different kinds of accommodations. I can give you an example of why subtyping can be important in these disorders. A lot of times people just say, well, you have to repeat something. You want to repeat something if the person has trouble hearing the particular sounds in words and might need more time to process a direction. So then if somebody didn't get it the first time, you would repeat it versus rephrasing something for somebody who isn't understanding it because they aren't getting the words or the concept. You would try and rephrase it in simpler language and language that is shorter and easier to understand.
Do kids ever grow out of this?
The auditory system develops over time and is not fully mature until probably 12 or 13 years old. So some kids will develop out. The challenges coming into the system will change. And sometimes it might be a problem, sometimes it won't. And sometimes with good early identification and appropriate remediation, a lot of these problems can be changed in major ways.
We'll take a short break now and be right back to finish our discussion about auditory processing disorders in kids.
For an audio CD of any parent's perspective show, send a check or money order for $15 with your name, mailing address, and phone number to Parents Perspective, P.O. Box 42283, Washington, D.C., 20015.
Welcome back to Parents Perspective. We're talking with speech-language pathologist Kathy Hoste about auditory processing disorders in children. Kathy, in what other ways would you say this disorder affects a child's schoolwork? And even more important, how can schools make a positive difference for them?
Language is both the medium and the message for academics. You're actually processing the information, actual speech, actual language to learn something. And it is the content of what you're trying to learn. And then language is also you're reading. That's a language activity. And then you're asked to show what you know through writing, which is another language activity. Speech and language disorders often are a result of central auditory processing disorders. And they have huge ramifications when you're getting into language and learning. And actually, most learning disabilities are language learning disabilities. That's the biggest proportion.
So that's the currency to get in the door.
It is. It's for learning. It's for social skills. These are really important things. And adults. Yeah. I mean, you'll grow out of them. But adults will still have problems. You can think of cocktail parties where it's hard to hear in noise and when they're competing messages. Those are auditory challenges that you'll have through the lifespan.
But people can, with treatment, be able to function better. In other words, because I'm thinking of this whole process that teachers have to speak, sometimes in shorter sentences, sometimes rephrasing things, it almost presents as though the child weren't smart enough to get it, and you don't want to go through your adult life, we hope, having a situation where people have to treat you in a way that calls into question your capabilities.
You don't want to go through life with that because you are then very helpless and dependent on the other person making the accommodations. That's why it's very important with these students, and what families can do is they need to learn to self-advocate and to get what they need. Families can provide good treatment for the child, direct work on their auditory system that's going to make a difference. Then there'll be accommodations that they have to get maybe in their jobs or in their schooling. But as unfair as it seems, the burden really is on the person to get what he needs in order to function as well as he can with his issues.
That's something parents are responsible for encouraging and teaching and modeling.
Yes, and getting really in place for their child.
Okay. Well, at this point, I think it's a really good idea to ask about resources and ask what parents can do, how we can find out more about this kind of problem, and where we can go to get our children help.
Okay. Well, the big organizations are the American Speech Language Hearing Association, and they have a website that's very good with lots of information on auditory processing, www.asha.org. And then there's the Learning Disabilities Association, www.ldonline.org. And Scientific Learning, that is the parent company for an auditory training program called Fast Forward, that is www.scilearn.com. And they have a lot of articles on auditory training and auditory processing disorders. There is a book that I think is very friendly, and it's When the Brain Can't Hear, and it's by Terry James Bellis, B-E-L-L-I-S, PhD. I think people that suspect auditory problems in their child would find that a really useful resource.
And you have one more that's a real humdinger.
I do. It's Little Rat Rotten Hut. And
you heard right, everybody.
This you can find on the internet. I have a very long website for it, but the easier way to go at it is to Google this. Google Ladle Rat Rotten Hut.
Every word is just what you said, right?
And what it is the story of Little Red Riding Hood in a language that makes it sound like an auditory processing disorder would sound to a regular ear. And I think it's fun to listen to because you can see this was written, I believe, by a French professor to show what the effect of prosody in language. So that when you say once upon a time and you say it with that those kinds of inflections, you can say that in almost with jargon and people will still hear once upon a time.
Kathy Hostey, we are so fortunate to have had you with us because our knowledge of auditory processing disorders has been tremendously increased by our conversation. So thank you so very much.
You're welcome.
Our gift for our first caller is an autographed copy of our latest book, Raising a Successful Child, Discover and Nurture Your Child's Talent. Just call us toll-free at 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address. That's 1-800-791-8573 with your name and mailing address, and please spell anything that's not obvious. That's a help to us. Mention show number 324 and tell us, if you can, what station you're listening to.
Visit our website, www.parentsperspective.org. That's www.parentsperspective.org, where you can even listen to a show of your choice. This is Sandy Burt and Linda Perlis. We're glad you could share Parents' Perspective. Today's program was made possible with generous support from the Joseph and Anna Smith Foundation. Our sound engineer is Drew Chapp. Music for this program was composed and performed by Jonathan Burt.